Hey everyone, and welcome to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast. I'm Alex.
And I'm Caleb.
And this is the show where we chip away at the masterpiece that is Avatar: The Last Airbender. Today, we're going to be talking about Book 1, Chapter 10, Jet.
Ooh, Jet.
Yes, this is a spicy episode, Caleb.
Yeah, it's another Dave Filoni episode.
Yes, directed by Dave Filoni and written by James Egan. This episode came out May 6th, 2005, and a lot of fans remember it for its darker tones.
Yeah, so to give you a quick recap for those of you that may not be as familiar with the show or haven't seen it in a while, this is the episode where they're going on Sokka's instincts and choose not to fly, which ends up getting them surrounded by some Fire Nation soldiers, and Jet saves them, winning over the heart of Katara for the rest of the episode and kind of influencing the vibe, where Katara just wants to be with Jet and do what he does, and Sokka's jealous and kind of hesitant about Jet.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, this is the episode where Jet blows up a dam that floods a town, and that's the plot there of the
right
episode.
Right, and Sokka ends up saving the day by convincing the town to evacuate in case that dam would be destroyed.
Yeah, and Katara gets a little heartbreak moment where
more than that. I'm excited to dig into that moment later.
Her crush isn't exactly what she thought it was.
Absolutely. One thing that I think is cool in this episode is this episode's kind of like a feature of Katara and Sokka's relationship.
Yeah, a little bit,
I would say.
Aang's just kind of along for the ride in
he is along for the ride in this episode, and that becomes less frequent. Yeah. You know, especially by the end.
But that's kind of common in Book One. You know, you see more of Aang taking a backseat to these episodes, where it's really more about learning about Sokka and Katara and their skills that will bring them through.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Just talking right at the beginning of the episode, I guess. I like that there are some of those world-building moments where Sokka's, like, surveying the trap. Because remember, they start off by seeing, like, the traps that are set up for the animals. and Sokka's just, like, observing them and says, oh, this is, like, a Fire Nation trap. You can tell by the metalwork.
Yeah.
That's kind of, like, a cool moment. They don't always, like, talk about how things... Well, actually, they do that all the time. That's why I like Avatar. They do talk about how things are made, and you can tell the difference between, like, a Water Tribe thing and a Fire Nation thing.
Yeah. Metalwork is definitely the Fire Nation's forte.
I mean, to have metal as, like, a concept, to have, like, that dense earth, I mean, you need fire bending or, like, that heat, you know, to...
I mean, like you hear, you know, earthbenders have... what are they called? Like heating rocks or like, there's that spark rocks maybe that they use to start their tea later on.
Yeah. Well, there are real world things like that.
So like
flint, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like other nations do have access to
fire.
They
do like call them spark rocks or something though, don't they?
Yeah. And, like the Earth Kingdom obviously does have the ability to forge armor and spears and swords and things like that. So it's not exclusive to the Fire Nation to have the ability to forge things, but I do think the fact that the majority of the Fire Nation is built on volcanic land, does give them access to rarer materials.
That's fair.
Probably higher grade metals than the rest of the world has access to.
Yes, and that makes sense why they might have had an industrial revolution sooner than other nations, you know, and there are real world examples of different regions having access to different resources that led to different discoveries at different times, you know, and then, you know, because of humanity, sometimes it doesn't always turn out well for everybody.
Yeah, the Earth Kingdom inventing the train system and...
Yeah, that's a good point.
Omashu with its mail chutes.
Mm-hmm. There's examples of ingenuity in every nation.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. Think of what world it would be if every nation had like equal power, you know,
equal access to technology, equal power. Yeah. Like there just wouldn't be any conflict between nations.
Yep.
Because everyone would have everything everyone wants.
Yes. I really get a kick out of the whole Sokka's instincts talk at the beginning. I think that, first of all, it is funny, but it is like, it's kind of a biting discussion too.
Yeah.
When that comes up, like that is a, you know, I'm sure you might have just like, I might have like when you're that person in the friend group that like everyone just keeps chiming back to this thing that obviously bothers you or that you like once said or like whatever. And they're like spinning it around on you. Like I feel for Sokka here.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like
I do like the moment where, when Sokka first suggests not taking Appa and they're like, let's walk. And Aang's like, I don't know. It might be fun walking. And then it immediately smash cuts to him. He's like, walking stinks.
Yeah. That's a great example of that Gilligan's cut that we were talking about in a previous episode. And when Katara is like making fun of Sokka, I like that. Like you see this like playful side of Katara too. But I don't know. I don't know if it maybe goes a little too far. It's hitting at Sokka's leadership, but I think it might also be like hitting at like, well, it is hitting at his masculinity. Like they talk about his like cracking voice, you know, and stuff like that. And they're all tied together.
Yeah. And they do start that fight with the, that little Fire Nation battalion they come across. Mm-hmm. And, every time Sokka's about to hit someone, one of Jet's crew gets him first.
Yeah,
and Sokka's like, oh man, you know, and like he's like, that one was mine, and they're like, should have been quicker, and like he's consistently getting passed up by these other characters,
undermined at like every around every corner in this episode. I definitely have more examples later on to talk about, but there is that like argument that he and Katara are having, and they're like lines one right after the other where I'm like, whoa, these are like whole discussions in and of themselves. I think the first one is that like, okay, Sokka thinks of himself as the leader.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Like compared to like Katara, who says, if anything, Aang is the leader. I'm kind of like, really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
She's literally just saying that despite Sokka, I think.
Okay. You think so?
Because she still sees Aang as a child.
Right. But she, in her mind, the whole purpose of the journey is Aang.
Right. To, you know, make him into the avatar he's supposed to be.
Yes. And it, when the journey started, he was the one that was pointing out all these destinations on the map. He had like a, you know, he was a man with a plan, you know, some plan we know now. But we know that Katara does admire Aang a lot in a certain way.
So Aang is Aang's the friend that has a car. And everyone else does not. Like, have a
car. I love that you're saying this, bro, because you were the friend with the car.
Yeah. Yeah. So, he chooses where they go, basically. But I wouldn't say he's the leader. He just has the mode of transportation to get everyone where they need to.
I love that you said that. So that's like one interesting that came up. Second thing that I really like is just Jack DeCena's delivery of when he goes, so I'm the leader, you know, and he's like kind of cracking his voice. It's comedic, but you like feel for the character too. And obviously he had to like, you know, kind of like make up those voice cracks, you know, in the right places, you know, to make it work the way it did. So just kudos to him. Last thing that he says, Sokka's like, what's the, you know, thing about kissing a girl? And Katara's like, oh, I've met Gran-Gran. And Sokka's like, other than Gran-Gran.
Yeah.
What's he talking about here? Because I was reading about it and people were saying he might be talking about Suki. And I'm like,
he didn't kiss Suki. That was, Suki kissed him.
Right. And that was, and also, and this is, I mean, I know I'm like a 27-year-old dude, but it's like, that was not a mouth kiss. Like, you know, and I know this is like a kid's show. I know.
But we do get mouth kisses later in the show.
So yes, but it's
not,
like,
it's not like they're afraid to go there.
Right. So my question is, does like, would Sokka constitute that as a kiss? And I'm like, I don't know about that.
In his mind he would.
Really?
I do. I think
Walk me through that.
I think in his mind anything constitutes as like the most glorious win for him, you know.
Okay.
I mean, there could be girls we don't know about. Like you said, the Southern Water Tribe may have like other settlements, you know, that we don't know about.
Right. If we're taking our knowledge from the Netflix Avatar, they were only from Wolf Cove,
right,
in the Water Tribe.
So, like, or whatever, there could be more settlements there.
So I don't know if he's like just trying to get by in this argument, or if
I think if we're only going off of what we've seen, he is definitely counting Suki's little cheek smooch as like a big win for him. Like,
mm-hmm.
And in his mind, even though it was just a peck on the cheek, he's like made out with Suki.
I could also see this sort of thing because, I mean, you know, tell me if this ever happened or you knew of a friend this happened to in like middle school or something, where it's like there was like a little thing that happened, but if you were backed into the corner or asked about it specifically, which Sokka is here, you know, when his sister says you haven't kissed a girl, maybe this thing, you know, that technically was a technical kiss, you know,
yeah,
you know, in this argument, he's going to say, well, yes, I did. So, ha.
Yeah.
You know, and he, I don't know, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do. I think that's absolutely it. Like, he's taking his smallest achievement, if you will, by getting a peck on the cheek from Suki and being like, yeah, I've kissed a girl.
Yeah.
And
other than green,
totally man. Blowing it out of proportion in his mind.
Yes.
Just to win the argument.
Sure. How about Jet's swords, bro?
Those are actual Chinese hook swords. Those are real blades.
Those are the coolest things of all time.
They are very difficult to use.
Yeah? Have you ever, held?
I've, yeah.
Tell me about that.
So, you know how Zuko's swords, like, can become one sword or they can split into two.
Mm-hmm. And I've seen you using swords like that.
Yeah. Chinese hook swords can do that. Some of them can, mm-hmm. Where that's like, it's one sword that splits into two.
Mm-hmm.
But Jet's specifically aren't shown to do that. Otherwise he would just wear one sword and you'd see him like unlock it into two.
Yeah.
But yeah, his style is very, very interesting. He uses what's called a long style.
Okay.
Where you actually hook the two together the longest way possible and you see him like swinging both swords.
So dope.
That's a really high risk, high reward way to use that sword.
Uh-huh.
Because on the one hand, the blade, like the guard on the handle is sharp.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, like, the whole thing is dangerous. And if you catch it the wrong way, you could cut yourself or stab yourself. So it really shows his mastery of the blade to be able to switch between the two styles of being able to hook them together, swing the long way, catch it, go back to doing two style.
You know. Well, two thoughts that I'm having are that, first of all, like, when it comes to the animation, it makes sense to me that they would have chosen, like, the high-risk, high-reward concept because it's just more thrilling to watch. Yeah, like, they probably had a lot of ideas.
This is a very pretty episode, too.
Absolutely.
Like, with Aang's airbending, you see the leaves, like, getting swept up in his air and stuff. And
yes, that is a good example. But thinking about that concept of, like, the high-risk, high-reward, how much sense does that make for Jet's character, too?
Yeah,
that is not the only high-risk, high-reward behavior he exhibits.
It's all the, all of his gambles
are
like all or nothing.
Yeah, and that comes down even to the way that he fights. That is such a cool detail.
Mm-hmm.
I really like seeing some of those early interactions that the gang has with the Freedom Fighters, like when they're like meeting each other and stuff. Gosh, that interaction that Aang has with the Duke and Pipsqueak, that is hilarious.
Yeah.
I think that when Pipsqueak laughs, his big billowing laugh, it sounds like such a genuine laugh. It like, I don't know. It just puts a smile on my face. Yeah.
He's such a big guy to.
Yeah. I don't know who does the voice, but I really liked his performance.
His delivery, yeah.
Yeah. Then, of course, we see how Katara behaves around Jet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is a very clear infatuation.
Yes. Yeah, we see her, like literally, like, rosy cheeks, like, looking
up at him, like in the light, yeah, you know, and he's so beautiful.
They have that. They have that moment where they're like flying up on the zip cord, and he's like got her by the waist, and they're just like ascending into the tree branches in slow motion.
Yes, this episode kind of reminds me of like Twilight a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, and I get why she likes Jet. Jet's pretty cool.
He's a bad boy. He's elite. He's a true leader. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
He might not be a good leader, but he's a true leader.
Uh-huh. And he does do a good job, like, painting himself in the light that, you know, he knows he should be seen by them. That's, yeah, like, what makes him so dangerous. But his, like, charisma.
Yeah.
Too, right?
And I love the diversity of his crew, too. He's got the sniper. He's got the bruiser. He's got the demolitions expert. He's got, you know, all these different roles that you'd want in like a thief crew or like a, you know, like a saboteur crew.
Yeah, like, yeah, you're so right. This seems kind of like the, oh, I gotta call some old friends. All of, yeah, those characters are there. It's like Atlantis, the Lost Empire, yeah, or something. I also really love like the culture of the Freedom Fighters. Very, and here I am, Caleb. Last episode we were Lost talking Boys. About Hook.
Yep.
I have to talk about Hook. They are very Lost Boys. Just like the Lost Boys, they all have like nicknames that, mm-hmm, are probably not all, you know, their actual like, yeah, God-given names, you know. But
well, Arthur, I prefer to use the names their mothers gave them.
Right, Hector.
Hector.
But yeah, so I wonder because like Jet, it's like that could be like a real name, but we know that the other guys have kind of nicknames. Names.
I feel like Jet named himself Jet.
Okay.
I feel like he was not cool and he became cool.
I have like a whole discussion that I wanted to have on Jet's name. So let's like just open the box right, yeah, now. Because, yeah, like, I want to say my thing because I think you're going to say something smarter.
Well, thank you for the presumption.
I was going to talk about, in this episode's cultural context, this is like an important thing. Like this episode is about, in part, you know, terrorism. It's, yeah, about terrorism. Mm-hmm. The Freedom Fighters, you know, if you spin that language around, I mean, these are terrorists.
And we're seeing how, rebels, yeah.
Right. We're seeing how they think of themselves. And if you think about when this episode came out, you know, there was a recent, you know, example of terrorism that was on everybody's mind in the world. You know, this is an episode released in 2005. We know that 9/11 occurred in the early 2000s. I'm not saying that the creators were deliberately like, because of 9/11, we're going to make this episode. No, I don't think that is what happened. But I think that that was like a cultural topic that they covered in this episode in a way. And it's a coincidence, at least, that like his name is Jet. I don't know. Like, I know that that is like a name that actually does exist in its phonetic simplicity, like in, mm-hmm, other cultures and stuff. I doubt that they were like, you know, saying that his name's going to be like an airplane, but I'm just saying it is like an interesting, like, I don't know. It crossed my mind.
Maybe a very subtle nod.
I don't know. I don't even know if it was that. I'm just saying what an interesting coincidence, but you say your thing. Cause I think that it probably will make more sense than what I just said.
Well, I was just going to point out that, you know, Jet definitely takes an interest in Sokka in this episode. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because Sokka reminds Jet of who he used to be.
Okay.
I think Jet is someone that wasn't sure of himself and tried to take moral high grounds and like trusted his instincts and got hurt. And that's why he chose kind of a darker path, but where he was more sure of himself,
mm-hmm,
and he got the results he was looking for. And so that's why he's been able to cultivate this crew and really stick it to the Fire Nation, because that was Sokka's goal initially too, was to knock some firebender heads, right?
Right.
When he first set out.
Or at least that was like a collateral benefit of the journey. He was really there to protect Katara, you know, and, yeah, you know, sure, maybe I guess help the Avatar, I guess.
And we don't know much about Jet's family. We know that he lost his family to the Fire Nation,
mm-hmm,
but, you know, it's plausible that he could have had a little sister who died in the attack, and he wasn't there to protect them.
So that's true. So, I didn't think about like other family members other than like a mom and a dad.
So like he thinks of this crew as his family, and he will do anything to protect his family, mm-hmm. even if it means destroying an entire town.
Sure.
Just to keep the Fire Nation as far away from his family as he can.
Mm-hmm. Jet, in a way, could represent like what Sokka could become.
Yeah.
They are certainly foils for each other. There are many examples. We know that Jet, like you said, he is currently a popular leader. Mm-hmm. And Sokka in this episode is very deliberately like delegated as an unpopular leader. Yeah. Yeah. Neither of the people in his gang consider him the leader necessarily. Okay. Right. Jet does not have mercy.
Right.
Sokka does have mercy. We see that come up with the old man situation.
Which is why, like, you said it in the last episode, the Sokka's building towards that politician status. Mm. This show,
he's not like necessarily building that right now, but we see like how
his compassion and mercy.
Yes, there are like, traits that he has now that we see how they could become that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah, he's probably not thinking, oh, someday I'm going to be the leader of the Southern Water Tribe.
The concept of even being like a politician in Republic City, he can't even conceptualize that right now.
Right.
That doesn't even exist.
Yeah. There's no allied force yet. Like
there's no city that is like multi-elemental or yeah. multinational or you say.
If anything, there's a couple of colonies that have
there's cultural integration happening. A few
generations of multicultural family,
right? But it's not this like widely established and documented. Like we're all gonna live here, and we're gonna have like a council that represents, it's like democracy, that like represent different parts of us, and we're all gonna meet regularly, and we're gonna vote and. All those things.
Yeah, none of that's even, like, been dreamed of yet.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but you know what? Despite all of these things that, like, they throw at us in this episode to show that Jet and Sokka are foils, I still don't get the impression that Sokka gets too shaken in his masculinity by Jet. He even has a line where he says, I'm not jealous of Jet. And, like, the way he says it, I, like, believe him.
Yeah. I think maybe at first there was a little bit.
Maybe.
But as soon as he saw Jet's cruelty, he was like, oh, no, I'm not into that.
Yeah, but like, and it's interesting that, like, Katara kind of tries to even, like, she's being awful to Sokka in this episode, in my opinion. She really tries to yank him off of this, like, perception of himself. She's, like, trying to disillusion him.
Yeah.
And he actually has the fortitude to say, yeah, no, I'm fine.
Well, something else I noticed in this episode, just another consistency with Sokka's character, when they come back from attacking that old man, Sokka's like, your boyfriend Jet isn't who you think he is. And he uses the same phrasing as when they were going to go look for Aang. He's like, your boyfriend Aang is blah blah blah.
Yes.
And Katara immediately was like, he's not my boyfriend. In this episode, she doesn't refute it. Uh-huh. She just accepts it. He's like, your boyfriend Jet, and she defends Jet.
Well, Caleb, did you know that in the Avatar extras for this episode, they say that Katara has her first kiss and it is with Jet? So, like, in some sort of canon, that is, like, what happens.
Yeah, and fully, she believes that she's Jet's girlfriend.
Or, like, yeah, whatever it is. It kind of, like, ticks me off a little bit.
Yeah, just a hair, because you know, like, how evil Jet actually is.
Yes.
And, like...
And to see what it brought out in her.
Yeah.
That, like, also... You know, I'm sure she's thought of this too, but like, yeah, it is not cool to see Katara acting that way.
No, especially because you know where she ends up, right? Like she ends up becoming the mother of the Air Nation. Like,
yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point.
Which represents freedom and fun and, you know, those are kind of the things that Jet stands for, but he's also doing it in a way that is destructive.
Yes, I have to say that there is such a wonderful moment of payoff when Katara is kind of like realizing what Jet is. I want to walk you through this moment, dude, because it got me hype when I was watching it this time. First, like Katara kind of catches up with Jet and they're like, what's going on? Because she now has like the knowledge of like what they're going to do with the dam or whatever. And she's like wondering where Sokka is. And I don't know if Jet says something. He says like Sokka's fine or like whatever it is. But Katara says like, where's Sokka? And she says it with like deadly seriousness. Like she thinks that Sokka might be gone.
Yeah.
Like when she says it. And that like really hits me. But after that, dude, it gets worse. Because Jet, like, he like puts his hand on her face, you know, and he's like, Katara, or something like that. And you see her face in this shot, and she's crying, and there's this like ugly, like horror, like string going like, descending slowly.
Yeah.
And do you know what that sound is, bro? I think that in her mind, Jet is literally transforming into a monster, right? Because she previously, 10 seconds ago, would have longed for his touch and she admired him. And when that horror, like string, like it's like a transformation scene string, like in a horror movie. That is what is happening to her right now.
Yeah, I wonder if that's just a straight violin, like hitting a descending note, or if that's like a saw on a.
You know, I don't know. You know.
Like when you play a saw, like.
Well, that's a very, very particular sound. It's not a saw. It's certainly a string. Okay. But it's played very piercingly.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
I just thought that was like a well-crafted moment.
Definitely a jarring moment. Absolutely. And then she blasts him with water, and like pins him against that tree and freezes him at the end.
Yeah.
Like, that's the first time we've seen her use frost breath. To freeze.
Yeah, someone. That's a good point. I wonder when she figured that one out.
She's definitely grown since the last episode in terms of her bending.
Yes. There is a bit of like that relational retribution aspect to that, like freezing someone too. Like, I don't know. And help me like try to articulate this, bro. Like for that moment when she discovered that he was a monster, there is something also to be said about her like getting him to be like, no, be quiet. And listen to me now, I'm speaking. There is something in her power, in her femininity, that like means. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't know. And it feels so good to like see her have that moment, because it's like, okay, at least she was able to like say her words before leaving to him, because that was the least that he deserved, you know, after all that.
Yeah, one point I wanted to put in Jet's corner is his his athletic ability. Is just insane.
Yes.
For a non-bender, for him to be keeping up with Aang through the trees, like...
Yeah, that's a good point.
All he's got is his swords, and, like, Aang's jumping around using airbending jumps, and, like, he's able to leap from the tall trees and descend quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And Jet follows him, like, everywhere, like... And he's always only a couple steps behind, like, the whole time.
Yeah. There's that shot that I really like where it's, like... A moment of peace. You see the treetops, and it's just the two of them, like, whew, like kind of like grazing over the treetops. And there's this like peaceful string that just does like a do 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 do. It's like a down strum.
Yeah, that's definitely a nod to
Naruto, right?
No.
Oh.
That's a nod to traditional Chinese kung fu movies with wire work.
Oh, I see. Well, Naruto obviously has, you know, at least a toe dipped into those waters too.
Yeah, but
I thought that whole scene with the sword fight in the trees might have been a reference to Naruto.
No, it's like especially.
Well, don't say no, because
maybe, but especially with the leaf choreography, it's a nod to like Chinese kung fu and that like mystical side to kung fu that you'll see it often in like. You know, like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, or like some of those other wirework films that use kung fu a lot. You'll see like leaves blowing around the main character in like a tornado type fashion, or like you know, you'll see them throw like a knife or something, and the leaves will like dance around the knife in midair as it's flying towards its target. So like that. That whole sequence is just like a big love letter to to wire kung fu movies.
That's like, fair. And those were not something that I really like was exposed to as a kid. My parents weren't into those movies in the slightest. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll
have to show you some because they're beautiful, you know?
Yeah.
You even get to see it in Shang-Chi, the Legend of the Ten Rings.
Okay.
Dude.
I did see that, but I wasn't even, yeah.
Yeah, there's the scene at the beginning when his dad and mom meet and they like do a little kung fu battle.
Sure. I saw it when it came out. That was like at least a couple years ago.
She's got like leaves that like swirl around her and yeah.
Cool.
It's all very reminiscent of early kung fu wire work.
I'm a very big fan of swirling leaves.
On the vine.
Just a couple things I wanted to point out before we move on to animation production and sights. The knife with the poison, you know, with like Jet saying, you didn't see that he had a knife on him with the old man.
Yeah, in the poison compartment.
Do you think that like that was actually there?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
It was definitely a plant.
Yeah, I kind of thought that Jet was making that up too, but they don't like cover it, which is why I was a little.
Well, Smeller Bee has a knife that looks almost identical to that one. I did go back and look. It's not the same knife, but it does have that like curve to it.
Okay.
That like wavy pattern in the blade.
And so, who knows if they had another one lying around?
Right. It could be Jet's knife. It could just be a knife they confiscated from a different raid. Like
right. Yeah, so, okay.
And Jet seems like the kind of person that would have a poison knife on him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he got the opportunity to kill a firebender any way, shape, or form, he would do it.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a good point, too. One line that Jet says to Sokka that kind of, like, raised my eyebrow is he says, they don't understand the demands of war, not like we do. When he's talking about, like, Katara and Aang.
Yeah.
That's kind of like, because right now I think he's trying to manipulate Sokka.
Yeah.
Right. And he's doing it by leveraging kind of the man thing.
Yeah.
He's trying to kind of be like, come on, the girl and the kid. We're men.
Yeah.
We like, I think that's kind of what this episode is trying to get at.
Leader to leader.
Right. How interesting that both Katara and Jet try to kind of like play at Sokka's insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't work for either of them. It is actually kind of nice to see Sokka stick to his guns here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he is relying on his instincts throughout the whole episode.
Yes, yes.
And that's like his consistent theme is that he always trusts his instincts as a warrior and as a leader. That's his heritage.
Mm-hmm.
Like his instincts got him through those years where his dad was away.
True.
And he was leading the village. Like, not leading the village, but leading that like group of kids and like trying to inspire them to step up and be warriors.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely. Aang's glider gets broken in this episode.
Yeah,
when does it get fixed?
He must have fixed it off screen. Like,
oh yeah, how does one do that?
I mean, Aang would be the only one that would know, right? Like.
Unless it's like something that could be like sewn and Katara did it or something, but I don't know like what material makes up the cloth.
Yeah, I don't know if it's even, I don't even know if it's cloth.
Yeah, we don't know what it is. It's just red.
It's something that's so thin.
And it fans out. Like you think it could be like a paper fan like material or something.
Yeah. Like it, I don't know. It's sturdy enough that it weathers the elements.
True.
But it's also thin enough that it can fold in almost to nothing. Like the staff just looks like a staff when it's all collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's those notches in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, where does that material go?
Yeah.
When it collapses.
Yeah. And that's why I'm kind of like, it could be paper. You know, or something like paper like, but like, you know, different, probably some avatar material that only exists from some animal or something. But
I mean, even with his second staff,
except it wouldn't be made from an animal because these were airbenders and they wouldn't have done that
unless it's like silk.
Mm-hmm.
They could have used like silk threads from a spider.
Mm-hmm.
But
this is a tangent. If anyone thinks they know what, you know,
what makes is Aang's glider made of?
Yeah, please let us know in the comments or something. I don't know. There is something poetic about the old man telling the townspeople that, like, Sokka was telling the truth. And I kind of thought about this for a moment in our previous episode while we were talking about how, like, you know, Sokka was, like, kind of talking up how much money the pirates could sell Aang for, you know, to leverage his situation with Zuko, and how it for once actually benefited Sokka to, like, kind of play his cards right and to be quiet at the right time and then to speak up at the right time. We, like, see that happen again here. Sokka does, like, there are times where he's very quiet, like, when he's observing, and there are times where he, like, has to take action. And I think it goes to show that, like, a leader is someone who can be trusted. Yeah. And I just really like that actually played out in his favor in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just another great, like, small development moment for him.
Absolutely. Are you ready to talk about animation and production stuff, bro?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just again, that beautiful choreography with the leaves swirling around the air.
Yes.
You get to see the water bending the steam into the geysers in this episode.
Yes, and we talked about how, like, when Katara says, "I've never bended water that I can't see before." That is not true. It's
an absolute, like, lie.
We've seen it at least two other times in previous episodes. We talk about them in the other episodes ourselves, so feel free to rewatch those if you want. But I don't know what she was saying there, unless she was kind of, like, playing into Jet's whole, like, you know, like, oh, I don't know how to swing the golf club. Show me how.
Yeah, give me words of inspiration, man.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what the heck was she thinking throughout this episode, honestly.
I don't know. I mean, because let's play this through, right? Like, she takes Jet on as her boyfriend, officially. Maybe.
And it's not official. We don't ever hear that.
No, but playing this through to the future, right? She thinks she's dating Jet. Mm-hmm. Does she still leave Jet to go to the North Pole? Or does she be like, all right, well, you guys go and Aang can just teach me when you guys come back? Or do they try to take Jet to the North Pole? Or, you know, like, how does that work?
I agree that she obviously hasn't really thought about this through. But we also don't know in this world, like, how people view, like, long-distance, you know, relationships, quote-unquote. We don't know exactly where we are in the world either in this episode. Like, this could be a more northern, like, sort of area, maybe close enough to, you know, have kind of a close, travel distance between that and, like, I don't know. I don't think that's at the forefront of what we should be thinking of, though. Really.
Yeah, I really don't think they're close to the North Pole. I think I know they're not lost at this point because Aang does tell Sokka that they're going the wrong way at the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. They're somewhere close enough to the Fire Nation where there's regular troops coming in. Mm-hmm. And they're also far enough from Ba Sing Se that it takes Jet and his group all that time to get to Ba Sing Se by book two.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. I don't know where we are on that one. But what I will say is that it looks beautiful and autumnal in this region of the world at this time, because I really like some of, like, the matte paintings that we get early on in this episode. And I think that they played their color really well in the intro to this episode, because you kind of start to see little patches of red as, like, the first couple minutes of the episode go on. And then the first little bloom of red that you see, that's the bushel that they go through, and they see the Fire Nation camp there, and then they're surrounded by the red leaves, right? So they really kind of, like, threw in more and more red until you were, like, surrounded by it, just like the gang was.
Yeah. I don't know what you said, but it sparked my my memory of those little
All the leaves in the
those little those pop rocks that Aang gets that he, like, uses to mess with Momo, and then Momo, like, gets revenge by, like, popping a bunch at Aang's feet.
Yes.
Do those ever come back?
Not that I can recall.
Because I feel like, you know, if Aang took that much of a shining to him, it'd be like his marbles trick that he pulls out, like, you know, he just snaps people here and there.
Endless possibilities. Yeah. Gosh, those things are annoying. They exist in real life.
Yeah.
You know, they'd always come out around like 4th of July or whatever.
Are they called poppets or something?
Yeah, yeah. And everybody's got a story of like, oh, it hit my foot or hit near my foot or like
I felt the spark in my toe.
Yeah, or my cousin like has a scar because who knows?
Yeah,
yeah, that's fair. How about Jet's like mouth twig? He's always got that thing in. It's an oral fixation.
I love the way they make fun of it in the Ember Island players. It's like huge.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a full-blown stick.
Yeah, I wonder if that's supposed to like, is that supposed to be meaningful to us in any way?
I think it's supposed to.
It looks cool.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Like, you know what, dude? Jet's design, Cowboy Bebop, bro. Look at his hair. That's the cigarette, bro.
Yeah.
How about that?
I wonder if Dave Filoni had any, like, if he worked at all on the English version of Cowboy Bebop.
Dave, if you're out there, please let us know.
I mean, it'd be a simple thing to look up, but yeah, I wonder.
I want to hear
it
from
could
Dave.
Just be, it could just be an influence, like he loves that show or something.
Yeah, I don't know. And I'm sure there are other, like, characters with similar frizzy hair or something, but I mean, come on, that's such an iconic anime character. Jet does look kind of notably similar. He's got like the agile fighting ability too. I don't know, bro, that could have been kind of a deliberate reference.
It could be.
I don't know, I don't have confirmation on that one, but
yeah, he is in a gang.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, a lot of similarities, who knows. I do really like that speech that Jet gives to the Freedom Fighters,
yeah,
you know,
to rile them up.
Yeah, they're showing his leadership, of course, but there's just that one moment that stood out to me when, like, the lighting kind of, like, changes and he says, like, or maybe they're dead wrong. Like, it, like, that moment, like, does a couple things. First of all, yeah, it's hype. It's pretty hype. But, like, that's, like, foreshadowing. That's, like, maybe showing you that this guy is a little
unhinged.
Yeah. Maybe he's taken a dark turn or something. And also, I don't know, there are not so many characters in Avatar that properly like die.
Yeah.
Jet, I know that it was a little unclear, but like he dies. You know, he dies in this episode. He's one of the few characters, you know, in the show that actually dies. And it's interesting that they kind of throw this like drastic lighting on him and he says like they're dead wrong. Like, I wonder if they knew at this time that
they were going to kill him off later.
Yeah, they might have known that he was going to have a darker demise.
Maybe. I mean, I feel like they definitely wanted him to be a returning character.
You think even that? Because, like, this could have been, like, you know how we were talking about with Suki? She might have been, like, a, we don't know for sure, but, like, what if she was a fan favorite and that was, like, a reason why she was brought back? Is it possible that Jet was also a fan favorite and they're like, oh, you know, we'll bring him back for book two, but just, like, kill him or something? Like, I could see it going either way.
Well, with a lot of shows like this where it's a grand adventure that's building to some great conflict, you often do have these episodes where you're like recruiting allies for the future.
That's a good point.
And making connections that you can call back to.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just an example of a failed connection.
Yeah.
Like Jet and his crew would have been,
they could have been allies.
Allies for the attack on the Fire Nation.
Mm-hmm.
But because of what happens, you only get a few of them.
Right. Yeah.
In the attack on the Fire Nation.
So true. I like that it's, like, the buddy pair, too. It's Pipsqueak and the Duke. I like that they're, like, just friends. You know, like, they're actually just, like, friends, you know, and you see them being friends. I love it.
Yeah.
I'm ready to talk about, like, some of the music.
Mm-hmm.
Jet gets his own theme.
Yeah.
Not every character gets their own theme in the show, but he does. It's kind of like the bum-ba-da, da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Very blustery and heroic and declarational, I would say.
Swashbuckler.
Yeah, I'm here. Look at me. Dare I say, it kind of Peter Pan-esque.
A little bit, yeah.
If you see like the Disney
Peter Pan from the 50s, I believe, like that bum ba ba, like that was like kind of like his little motif when he would appear, you know, having cut his silhouette out of the pirate ship's sail or like whatever it is that he did. So I really like that. When you see them collecting the goods after like the conflict, you know, they're packing up the jelly candy and the blasting jelly. They're going to take this all back to their camp. You hear the same, but it's more like chill now, you know, because they're like, oh, we're just, now we're hanging out. We're getting to know each other, gathering the supplies. But I like that that melody continues to be like a through line.
Yeah, it's both Jet's theme and just like the Freedom Fighter theme.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last moment that I really like, and all of these musical like clippings, if you listen to the season one soundtrack, they're all just on one track called Jet.
Yeah.
They don't appear like in that track in the same order that they do in the episode, which is kind of like interesting to listen to. I wonder if they like just patched it together that way for the soundtrack that was released like 2 decades later, or if it was honestly, I don't know. That's a mystery. I don't know. But either way, when they're like walking through the geysers, and like he's kind of walking them through that plan to like bend the water out of the geysers, you know that scene?
Yeah.
The music that plays during that part is kind of like very, I don't know, mystical or like haunting or something.
Well, because the plan's already been revealed at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know that Jet's going to blow the dam and flood the reservoir.
Right.
So you're seeing him carry through with the plan with the naive characters.
And you know they're being manipulated.
Yeah.
Sounds kind of conniving, you could even say. So that would make sense if that's what you're going for.
Right. And it's both like, it's triumphant for Aang and Katara because they are growing in their bending abilities. But it's also terrible because they don't know that they're about to flood the entire region below them.
Yeah. Like, yeah. That's probably a trope. I don't know what it's called, but like we, as the audience, we have knowledge that even like our protagonists don't have.
Yeah. And, you know, if the Fire Nation did know that Aang and Katara were the ones that filled the reservoir, that could just be another like thing on their wanted poster, like flooded an Earth Kingdom town.
Yeah.
Like, with Fire Nation occupation or whatever, you know, like.
Absolutely. I also just like thinking about the metaphor of that like moment, like think of like support for a leader. Like think of that as like water behind a dam. Like a leader needs to be really like sturdy and reliable and trustable. Like, and I like how like literally, yes, Jet is getting the unknowing supporters to like fill the water behind this dam that he is intentionally going to explode.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a great metaphor.
And what a shot that Longshot makes.
Oh man. Yes. Well, I thought you were going to say what a shot, like literally like camera shot that moment is. Cause that too, like it's a great shot that he shoots from his bow, but like also that moment where it gets very quiet and then Katara just goes,
you just see the arrow drop and it's just like,
yeah, she goes, no. It, like very quietly. Yeah. Yes. What a well-crafted moment.
Yeah.
Very tense, I would say. In the episode Legacy, its ranking kind of surprised me. It's at number 57 out of 61. This is a bottom five episode in the critic and fan aggregate ranking.
Interesting.
I wonder if, and don't get me wrong, this is like the IMDb like aggregate ranking. It might not mean so much at the end of the day. I don't know who all has put on, you know, rankings that are being considered in this aggregate. But I wonder if like it's hard to see like Katara be that way, you know, that for some people. Like,
yeah.
And to see Aang be that way. I would get if maybe this episode kind of got under people's nerves a little bit.
Yeah, like it makes people frustrated that they like Katara and Aang so much just to see them get used in this episode.
Well, it's like when we were talking about how allegedly like Katara had her first kiss with Jet in this episode, according to the Avatar extras. It's just like hearing that, it's like, oh, Katara, no, yeah, you know? Like,
dang it, girl.
Like, yeah, come on. You can do better than this.
Yeah,
you deserve better.
It's like when you can see a couple that no one else can see and they're each dating different people and you're like, like just be single at the same time so you can start dating already.
Yeah.
So, yeah, interesting to see that all happening. Mm-hmm. Are you ready for some tropes, Caleb?
Yeah, let's do some tropes.
Okay, cool. I've actually got a pretty good amount here today. Right. First one, easy one. It's called Beware the Nice Ones. We've had Beware the Silly Ones before. I believe there's a Beware the Dumb Ones out there. This one is Beware the Nice Ones. Of course, we're referring to Jet by saying this because we believe that he is all that and something more, but he's really not. Here's trope number two. This one's called Broken Pedestal. Jet for Katara. Katara saw him as someone who fought for justice and cared about the people that he protected. Only at the end does she realize that he will do whatever he thinks is necessary to keep the valley safe. Mm. And just like we were talking, how that image that she had in her mind of him was broken. We, as the audience, kind of have our perception of him broken as well. It's a big revelation moment.
Yeah, because, like, Jet's, he's so cool initially, and you want him to be this heroic character.
He fights cool. We'd love to see him again in another episode as a good guy. Yeah.
And even when he teams up with Zuko in book two to liberate the captain's food stores, you're like, okay, Jet's turned around.
Yeah.
He's a good guy now. Go Jet. Mm-hmm. And then, like, as soon as he sees Iroh heat that tea, he just, like, switches right back to kill firebenders mode.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. He does struggle with that through and through. Here's a good trope that I can certainly think of other examples of. This one's called Empathy Doll Shot. Can you think of what that one might be?
Just when Jet has no remorse or empathy for the town that he's about to destroy, even though it's mostly Earth Kingdom citizens.
Not really.
Or is it the old man?
No. We're literally talking about like a doll.
Doll.
Doll. Sorry. What did you think I said?
Doll.
Oh yeah. Sorry. No, empathy doll, like doll, like a play doll,
I thought you meant like Jet being like dull, like not understanding.
Oh yeah, no, sorry about that.
Is it Mrs. Pretty?
Yes, it's Mrs. Pretty. I also think of like Mulan, you know, with like a doll, like kind of showing like the innocence that was lost.
Yeah, very,
you know?
Very similar doll too.
Yeah, to Mulan. I like that. Avatar subverts it a little bit, like when we see, like in Mulan, for example, and I'm sure there are other examples, but in Mulan, you see the doll, and that's kind of like the revelation that there was like a little girl that was killed, you know. In this episode, you get that moment where you see the doll and you're like, oh no, but you at least see the girl, you know, who picks it up afterwards, and you're kind of like, oh okay, like the little girl's okay. So that's nice. They wouldn't kill the little girl in Avatar The Last Airbender. Or would they? Here's a trope that's kind of funny. It's called The Forest of Perpetual Autumn. It's always autumn in this world. It's been autumn for a minute. We've talked about it before.
Yeah, the winter solstice already happened.
Right, and it's still autumn. Red leaves we talked about. To be fair, we don't know what hemisphere necessarily they are in all of the time.
We don't even know what kind of planetary structure there is in this galaxy. There could be two suns, there could be multiple moons, there could be,
the whole planet could be shaped like a donut.
It could be flat.
I don't know. Well, it always appears flat in the title sequence, so coincidence?
I mean, the only way you ever see attacks planned is straight across the map. Like, if the firebenders just went west.
Caleb,
like,
I need you to be careful because we do not need Avatar flat earthers, bro. We do not need that.
But if the firebenders just went west, you know, they'd come up behind Omashu, or they'd come up behind Ba Sing Se, you know, like.
Wait, dude. That's kind of like a fair point.
Yeah.
They went the long way if they traveled like over all of the land of the Earth Kingdom.
Yeah.
Wait, do we ever like know if they used their ships to go around? Like, is there an ocean like the other way around? We don't really know.
It's unclear.
They never. Yeah, that's kind of fair. I don't know.
We might not know everything about this topic, though. I'm curious if there is an ocean on the other side of the Fire Nation between it and the Earth Kingdom on that side.
Yeah. Or, like, even the position of the east of the air temples.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've got north, south, east, west. The east and west air temples could theoretically be, like, a couple miles apart if the world is round.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they'd be really close to each other.
Well, they do have those cardinal directions, which leads us to believe that the Earth would be probably a globe, you know?
I mean, if the globe is... Like, what if this is just one part of the world and there's, like, a whole other side to it that we can't even...
Oh, if they ever did something like that, that would be super lame. Don't do that. It's like in Zelda when they're, like, on the Great Sea in Wind Waker, and then Phantom Hourglass, they're just like, there was more.
Yeah, you just didn't see this part of the world
yet. Yeah, yeah. That would be lame if they did that, in my opinion.
I agree.
All right, next trope. Did you know, Caleb, that there is a freeze frame bonus in this episode?
I did not.
When the flood starts, you can see cabbages floating in the water.
Yeah.
Telling us that obviously the cabbage guy got his stand probably destroyed again.
Without seeing it happen.
Right, he wasn't literally...
Well, you do see the cabbage stand... you don't see him, but you see, like, a cart of cabbages and, like, baskets or something on the other side of the street, and mm-hmm. then the water, like, hits the town.
Yeah, so that dude just can't catch a break. Oh, here's a funny one. This trope is called Little No. And we talked about it already. It's just Katara's little no.
Yeah.
Before the dam explodes.
Yeah, before the boom.
Yeah. I don't know, just a little personal... Yeah. No one can hear it, but no.
Yeah.
That's kind of funny. Here's a trope. We're getting close to the end here. It's called Silent Bob. There's a character that does not speak.
Longshot.
That's right. Longshot is a Silent Bob. Can you think of any other Silent Bobs in other TV shows or movies?
Not off the top of my head.
There are similar tropes, like, well, I think, like, in The Lion King, think of how there's, like, Ed the hyena who just, like, laughs at things.
He just, like, smiles and nods.
Yeah, and he's kind of, like, fritzy. Yeah, but he doesn't, like, talk or have, like, an active role, really. Longshot has a more active role than Ed in The Lion King, but, like, I don't know. That's definitely, like, something that I've seen. Oh, how about Hector? Hector Zeroni from Holes. He's like a silent Bob until...
I thought you were talking about Hector Salamanca.
Yeah, kind of another, yeah. That's Ding. Bell Bob.
Ding.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I was thinking about Zero from Holes. Yeah. That's kind of an example of that trope. You, like, see that, you know, obviously he comes out of his shell, but in that story he's introduced to as like a silent Bob. Even as the audience, we kind of wonder, like,
why doesn't he speak?
Yeah, yeah. So that's cool.
Or the little girl from The Patriot.
I haven't seen that movie in such a long time.
The youngest sister. I forget her name, but she doesn't speak. And, like, every time Mel Gibson comes home, he, like, goes to give her a hug, and she just won't speak. And then finally, like, the last time he's leaving for battle, it's after his son's been killed.
Mm.
And she's like, no, Daddy!
Oh, and you know how much it means because
she never spoke up to that point.
Right. And there is a moment like that for Longshot too. We have one more trope to talk about. And we've kind of grazed on it, but this one's called the shadow archetype. Do you know what character or characters this, trope might be referring to?
Mm-mm.
So this is talking about Jet. Okay. Jet is a shadow archetype for Sokka.
Okay.
And, you know, we were talking about how this represents maybe, like, what Sokka could become, or that maybe Jet perceives Sokka as, like, what he used to be. Maybe this is, like, kind of an indication to us at the audience that this is, like, a pathway that, like, Sokka could go down, but he chooses not to. Either way, Jet represents a shadow of Sokka.
Thank you.
I could be ready for some trivia if you are.
Yeah. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I've got a pretty low hanging fruit one, I would say. So I'll go first. My question for you, Caleb, is only one of our named freedom fighters does not reappear in the series. Who is it?
It's like,
I think he might be like one of the first introduced.
Yeah.
How about I just tell you? Because you're not going to get it, bro.
Just tell me.
Sneers.
Sneers.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't come back.
He does. Yep, he doesn't. You're right. What's your question for me?
Okay. What does Pipsqueak get hit in the head with after getting trapped when Sokka escapes?
Is it a lychee nut?
It is.
Okay, I was wondering because I know that he had some. Oh, but he gets, the Duke throws him another one and it kind of clinks him in the head, doesn't it? Yeah.
Are you going to eat your lychee nuts?
Yeah. Friends through and through.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for watching Tip of the Iceberg, the last Airbender podcast. If you like what you heard, or if you didn't like what you heard, feel free to leave us some comments, feedback, and the like. You can always send us a message at our email address, or you can follow us on social media at TOTI Avatar Podcast. We'd love to hear from you. This was Alex Weiss and Caleb Shaw. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.